Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guys. It's the People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
There's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more
realer. All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real sports guys talk real sports. We are excited. It's been good. This is D. Wilson, the building. I'm back.
Wow, winning.
I'm traveling. I feel like I got my legs back. I'm happy to be here, sitting in the captain's chair. I feel like a kid in the candy shop, and we're going to let it go. It's going to be hard, and we're going to get it hard. I got Phil T in the building. How you doing, Phil T?
I'm doing good. We've had a couple of weeks off. You know, I had to get my ankles taped very tight this weekend. They kind of patching me together, D-Wills. You know, I'm kind of patched together with spit tape and a whole lot of love and heart, but I'm here for you.
And we got a special guest tonight. You know, even anytime he's in the building and he shows his versatility, you know, he's a guru from K-Zoo. I'm going to call him Mr. Hamilton tonight just because when he comes through, we just got to pay respects. How you doing?
I'm very blessed, man. Thanks for having me. Haven't been on in a while. I feel like I miss you guys, man. So I'm glad to be back in the building, ready to rock the house.
Well, you know, I got to hit in with the intro to let you know we got a tight show tonight. You know, we got to get it up. Yes.
D. Wills, Eric sounded a little emotional, man. Sound like you're real happy to be here.
I didn't want to put him on Front Street, man. That's the only thing I was going to say.
sound like it's been a while since we had him on, man. We're going to have to get him scheduled in more regularly.
I didn't want to put him like that. But he came with it. I just said, well, you know, I'm not going to put him out there. That's what your boy did.
Like, is Eric going to make it through this statement? Man, his voice started cracking.
Like, I just won a Grammy. You know how you feel when you win a Grammy, you start choking up? Yeah.
That's right. He went to hug a little longing. before, you know, going to shake the hand of the opponent in the middle of the circle. He held that hug a little long, just like, I'm glad to be here, glad to be back. The lights are on.
Just kind of lingered.
Kind of lingered in there. I felt you on that one. I didn't want to just shed the light on it, but you guys did that. I didn't do it, so remember that. So we glad to have you here. But they are who we thought they were. You know, we're going to do that. And the thing about it is, you know, we're going to have a lot of fun in this first part of the show, talking about the NFL week and week 12 recap. A lot's been going on. You know, when we got the guru in the house, we got to do the fantasy football cipher. He's going, you know, folks are making that end run. I just secured my playoff spot. Phil T is seated two. The game changer seated one. You know, I told him I'm like the Villanova of football. I'm just here with Massimino and Ed Pitney. I'm just trying to get in where I can fit in, hoping I can make a run late. But he's going to help you as you're trying to strategize and do your things down the stretch. He's here to do his thing.
The thing about Marcus's team in our league, the Game Changers team, is, I mean, this dude is playing like he's winning by defense. We probably have about 1,300 points. And Game Changer is in first place on the technicality. His team has like 700 points. You know, but he has the same record as us. So, you know, I'm trying to figure that out. You know,
he kind of like the Broncos with Tebow. You don't know how they're winning. You don't know how they made it to the playoffs.
Yeah.
First downs, they ain't really good, but they there. So I understand it. So don't be surprised he gets the first round upset. He got yours truly in the building, and we gonna do that. You know, he got a Bill Belichick going with him, so you know, to beat him is really the good thing. But it is a champions tournament. We got some experienced folks who know how to set it up. So I'm just, you get your pencil, paper, computer out. If you like me, you better be prepared to drop an ad while he's talking, because I will do that on you. I got my phone ready. I will do that. But then we're going to do the five on the black-hand side. We got a couple of weeks of evidence in the NBA, right? Some things, maybe that drop is, they are who we think they are. You know, we're looking at some arrow up and arrow down on some of our key players in the NBA. Yeah, are we seeing some folks who are trending down?
They are who we thought they were.
Who are ascending and are moving to the next level. So we're going to talk about a couple of key NBA guys who we think are going up or going down their stock. And then we're going to end it with Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. It's going to be a power-packed show. I'm excited about this, and I'm ready to roll. So the NFL, we're in week 12. The question is, what do we know now? And we'll go, Eric, we'll start with you, man. What do we know? We're week 12. What do we know right now about the league?
You know, just looking back at last week, I think one thing that we see that's blatantly obvious with the Pittsburgh Steelers is Big Ben is not only underrated, but he's well needed.
That's
Big
right.
Ben slips under the radar as right about that elite level, even though he's got rings to back it up, but he still kind of stays out of that discussion. The Steeler offense is an absolute disarray, and it's a big difference when Big Ben is in the game. So we know that. We know RG3 is the truth. That guy's got back-to-back four-touchdown performances. RG3 is the truth. We know that the Giants, when they want to play, they can beat anybody. So we've got some evidence, even just looking back at week 12, we have evidence that, you know, the Giants are going to be problems. They're going to be problems for whoever. They're going to make that championship run. We know Green Bay Packers still have an offensive line issue. I mean, there's things that we just know, and the trends are continuing. The last thing that we do know is that Cecil Shorts is the truth. That's what
Man,
we know.
Cecil Shorts is the truth. Thank you. I want to thank you for that. That helped me a little bit. I just had to, when you
cool.
said that, I went and added so quick. I don't know if people could even check. I don't know if the paint even dried on anything before I had him on my lineup when you said his name. He paid dividends. So if y'all not listening out there, you in trouble. Don't blame it on us. Blame it on yourselves. Cecil Short is the truth. That's what we do know.
That's it, baby. That's what I know. That's what I know.
If you don't say nothing else right, you know that's right. Cecil Short is the truth. Not key. What do we know now on week 12?
Well, I tell you what, it's been a lot, man. Week 12 has kind of weeded out the pretenders and the cats that are for real. So if you're driving around, you may need to pull over before I say what I'm about to say.
Uh-oh.
I've been holding out. I've been holding out judgment. But at 11-1, 10-1, whatever their record is, it is time to identify that the Falcons are the real deal. It's time.
The Falcons are the real deal. So you already saying that we know they're the real deal. Woo, that's a tough one. I still got to see a first playoff game. But you saying they're the real deal. Tell me why.
Well, they've only lost one football game. That's the short part of it. I mean, that's it. At some point, we need to give these cats credit. You know, we're finding ways to give the Giants credit, and they're so inconsistent. We're finding ways to be all excited about the 49ers and the Bears. Well, what about the team that has only lost one ball game? And so, man, I've been in front of that cheering crowd saying, "Listen, you know, I don't know about the Falcons, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time to say it there for real." The next thing that we know after week 12 is that two teams in particular will have coaching changes in the offseason, if not sooner. And that will be Norv Turner. Talk about a guy who's just getting emotional at every press conference. Norv, I know we've been away from you all for the last couple of weeks, but Norv has really been getting loose at these press conferences. I thought he was going to choke the guy a couple of weeks ago. What do you think? What kind of question is that? So that 4th and 29, man, that just, you know, they start digging his coffin at this point when Ray Rice got the 29 yards on a 4th down. That was horrible. Yeah. And also the Eagles. The Eagles have let go of Jason Babin. Guy had 18 sacks last year. They are just setting the tone of cleaning house, as the game changer mentioned earlier today on text. And so it's pretty clear that the Eagles and the Chargers will be moving on from Reed and Turner at the end of the season. So I think that's what we know.
Wow. Now, and I think both of you, I'm still, the only reason I'm holding on to Atlanta, I know they only got one loss, but those other teams you mentioned at least demonstrated they could win something in the playoffs. And Atlanta still struggled to demonstrate they could win in the playoffs. And I agree with you. I think I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to hold up against dominant defenses, because I think they still have struggled in those games sometimes. But, you know, I'm trying to hold on. I can't do it until I see them do it in the playoffs. No matter what they do at this point, you know, they're kind of like, you know, the Heat. You know they're good, but before they win a championship, it's like you got to see what they do when the money counts. So I'm in the game with you. You know, we'll have to, you know, figure out what they go. But what I'll add to what y'all already got going on about what I know is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I'll say this about two teams. You just talked about the Giants. The Giants are being viewed as inconsistent, but really they are doing what they normally do. They have in the middle of the season, they're kind of riding themselves, but now they see the end of the road, they begin to pull things together, which you saw beginning happen against Green Bay. And, you know, solid teams, solid organizations, at the end of the day, always put themselves in a position to be good. The other thing is New England. They are putting it on teams. And so some of these, you know, we have a lot of flashes here and there. We're talking about Atlanta in a day, but, you know, these solid organizations that have been solid over the last 6 or 7, 10 years are still finding ways to get it done. And they're the ones that, even though they come down a little bit, they seem to stabilize faster than some of the other organizations. And the Giants in New England represent two of those things. So those are two things that we know. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of games we can reflect on. And I'll toss this one to you first, Phil.
Sure.
San Francisco and New Orleans. You know, what were some of your thoughts about that game? I mean, a lot of things have come out of that result of that game around the quarterback controversy, all the other things. But just thinking about the game, you know, what were some of your impressions when you saw those two matchups?
Solid game. You know, the Saints, they're 5-6 now. They had won a few games in a row. I truly think they're going to make a push to make the playoffs. The 49ers are just a really good team defensively. Yes, they gave up 21 points, but when you look at it, against the Saints, they held them total yards under 300 yards, I believe. Time of possession was pretty even. You know, the game was a game. I want to talk a little bit about this quarterback controversy. I don't know what Harbaugh's doing, man. You know, growing up, I was a Bears fan, grew up in Michigan, but the Lions were horrible, so we all kind of tried to find a different team to follow. And I remember, man, after the Super Bowl year, and Harbaugh is coming to town. Harbaugh, you know, 87, I think, was his first year in Chicago. And I remember the quarterback controversy, you know, with Ditka, the way that he kind of played Harbaugh and Tomczak. Yeah, Mike Tomczak sighting on the show.
Mm-hmm.
As well as when he brought in Flutie. You know,
wow.
Flutie was the guy that was going back and forth with Harbaugh. So it just – Harbaugh must think that quarterback controversies and competition brings the best out of your players, because perhaps that was his experience. Because as a quarterback, you would just assume that, you know, he knows how important his position is, how important the psyche of a quarterback is. So to me, it's just not rational. It doesn't make sense. It's not conventional. Perhaps Jim is just an unconventional type of guy, but to me, the way that Alex Smith was playing, I think his last full game, he was 18-19, you know, over the season he's around 70%. To me, I don't think his play merits an in-season change right now. Now, if you want to do something in the off-season, that's fine. But to me, Harbaugh has just kind of invited, man, this quarterback controversy. And I don't see it. Like, I don't see the sense of making a change midseason. First-year starter, Colin here, and you're going to expect some up and downs. Why do you do this midseason when you have a small window with your team? To me, it just does not make any sense. Can't do it.
Eric, what's your opinion on what you just heard or on the game reaction?
You know, I'll start with the game, and then I'll roll into the quarterback controversy. As far as the game, obviously a really good game, two balanced, you know, two top-notch teams that were playing some ball. You know, when I looked at the game in whole, the whole game, okay, San Francisco – with Colin Kaepernick, they're able to do different things. Alex Smith, there's only certain things that you can do with Alex Smith. I think we all would agree before Harbaugh came to the team, Alex Smith was on his way to be a Ryan Leaf somewhere on somebody's insurance payroll, you know, selling insurance. And I think what Harbaugh was able to do is come in and instill that confidence in him. So one thing before we, you know, as we jump into this, I'm going to read off a list, and I want someone to say what these all have in common. The quarterbacks, okay? New York Giants, Green Bay Packers, New Orleans Saints, Pittsburgh Steelers, New York Giants, Indianapolis Colts, Pittsburgh Steelers, New England, and New England Patriots. Every single one of those teams have won the Super Bowl in the last 9 to 10 years. Every single one of them had a top-tier and elite quarterback. Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, and Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers. So I think what Jim Harbaugh is doing is he sees something. He sees that he's missing something. While Alex Smith is a pretty good, he's a pretty good quarterback for that system. The, you know, he's one of those players where the system has to truly fit. And he's okay. Okay, we seen last year against New Orleans in the playoffs where he could throw the ball if he really had to. However, I think what Jim Harbaugh sees is Colin Kaepernick is able to do different things. He's able to open up that offense a little bit more, and it seems like he's saying that Colin has that extra oomph that is going to allow that offense to go a little bit further, to allow that defense to play a little more loose, a little more ragged, because they can take more chances because Colin Kay, he has that athletic ability. So he can run for a touchdown, he can throw a touchdown. He really only had a couple of bad tosses. And the one interception that he had, it was a fumble snap, and he picked it up off the ground and misread and didn't see the, I don't know if that was the outside linebacker or the cornerback kind of slipping under the coverage. So, I mean, the kid just flat out balled. And, again, he did it against the Chicago Bears, and then he did it again last week. I mean, the guy had a touchdown and a rushing. So passing and rushing touchdown, 231 yards. Again, I think that Jim Harbaugh sees that while you do have to be careful with the quarterback psyche, you know, you guys are a little fragile, but I think he sees the future could be with Colin Kay, and he's just trying to appease Alex Smith and keep him okay. Okay, we're going to get you going. He said Alex Smith is our quarterback, Kaepernick is our backup, but I think he sees the future, and the future is not with Alex Smith. The same way Harbaugh said, no, we weren't looking at Peyton Manning. Well, yes, you were. Yes, you were. No, we know that you were, Jim Harbaugh. But the thing is, to make Alex Smith feel good, what did they do? Throw him some more money. It's okay, Alex. We didn't go after Peyton Manning. Well, God dang it, yes, you did. Everybody knows it. Okay, anybody will take Peyton Manning. It's just the same thing. He's done it to him before. And if Colin didn't work out this last game or if he would have had a terrible game, I guarantee he would have brought it back in. So he would just kind of stand on that fence, hedging his bet, until he's for sure that Colin's going to be that guy, and then you put your money with him. But realistically, why do you have to? You don't have to reveal who's going to be your starter this next week. You don't have to do that until the game. It's really nothing where you just have to do it on Monday, name your starter. You can take your time. There's no reason to rush into it. I'm getting
you
off topic, but
to
back
win
to
the game.
To win the game. And I think Colin Kaepernick gives that team the best chance to win the game because of his versatility, his accuracy, and arm strength.
Well, and I agree with you. I mean, one of the things I had a chance to watch him when he played at Nevada, and I thought this guy has big upside in terms of skill set. And when Harbaugh drafted him, I'm like, he got a steal. And I felt like he could really work with this young man. And what I agree with you about is what Harbaugh knows is he's got a championship defense.
Mm-hmm.
But what he doesn't have is some type of advantage in preparation on offense. So his delaying in picking or figuring out who's going to be where creates the advantage he needs on offense. And in inserting Kaepernick and doing that makes people prepare in a different way. His offense is still about running the football, getting it to his tight ends and doing some of the other things, but he forces you to prepare for a whole bunch of other stuff that he might not run. And he's creating that advantage that you need to have when you don't have the quarterback that you listed. Right?
He
knows enough to do that. So, you know, at first I was like, well, what is he doing? But at the end of the day, he knows exactly what you just said, Eric. And the only way he can create that advantage is create that advantage in forcing the other team in their preparation, how they're thinking about it, and how he's utilizing that position to put smoke and mirrors on the fact he's still going to run the football. He's still going to throw this tight end. He's still going to do some of these things he's still going to do no matter who he has in the game. He's still going to run those same plays. So I think, you know, that's part of what he's looking at until he can get to a point where Kaepernick is either mature enough to do it or not. So that's a good thing. I think we've gone back to that. I think we got a good one on that. Green Bay in the Giants. Eric, I'm going to stick with you on this one. What's your initial reaction and response? This was a beatdown. We had 38-10. It exposed a lot about Green Bay. What are some of your initial responses?
Yeah, my initial response is watching this was Green Bay. They, number one, can't run the ball, which is not too big of a difference. They won the championship without having an effective, consistent running game, but at least a threat with James Starks a few years ago when he did win the Super Bowl.
That's right.
And then their offensive line. Their offensive line is horrible. I mean, it's an open door for the defenses. Now, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's the Arizona offensive line with my receiver, Larry Fitzgerald, out there, but that's another story. But Aaron Rodgers has been sacked the most 37 times in the league. Again, we're talking about an elite quarterback, a top 2-3 quarterback. He's been sacked the most at 37, more than any other quarterback in the league. Again, Tom Brady's not taking that kind of beating. So my thing about it is they've got some big holes. So Aaron Rodgers is not able to really deliver that ball because he doesn't have his number one receiver there. Greg Jennings changes the entire scope of the offense. Jordy Nelson is not a true number one. You can look at the same way when Hakeem Nicks is hurting, Victor Cruz isn't effective because Victor Cruz is a natural number one receiver. He is a great number two. And going back to Jordy Nelson, he is a great number two receiver. But when you're the number one receiver, that is what they're game planning for. They're game planning to close you out, to shut you out. So Jordy Nelson hasn't consistently been effective. Again, you know, Randall Cobb, who I really was high on in the beginning of the year, he's playing good ball. But Randall Cobb is not a true number one receiver. Jermichael Finley, this guy is hit or miss. Who knows when he's going to show up with no run game? I mean, realistically, Green Bay has some major problems. And when Jennings comes back, and I don't know if it's this week or next week, I think that's gonna help them out quite a bit. But right now, they've got a lot of offensive problems. And over to New York, I mean, they just got an awesome defensive line. I mean, they rotate. OC looks as healthy as I've seen him in a few years. I mean, that guy actually looked quick out there. You know, the defense looked pretty good. I mean, their pass defense really has been putrid throughout the year, kind of hit or miss, and, you know, they're injury prone out there. But, I mean, that line, everybody knows about that line. And just kind of moving on to the offense, the Giants look good. I mean, just like they always do. When they come out of a bye or they go through a rough patch of 3-4 games, no touchdowns from Eli Manning, what does he do? He comes out and he throws a few touchdowns. Hakeem Nicks, while he had a ton of targets, I'm not sure if it was 14 or 16, he had a ton of targets, and he only caught maybe 5 or 6 balls, but he was moving better. You know, he looked better. Victor Cruz caught a touchdown. I mean, Eli was getting that ball out and spreading it around. They had an effective running game. Brown, he messed up his leg, so he's going to be out for a while, but Bradshaw's there, and then they've got David Wilson. So, you know, New York Giants, again, they know how to turn it on in the later months, and that's what they're doing now. Green Bay has some major issues. Hopefully, Kalamazoo's finest Greg Jennings will help that offense become effective like it should be once he returns.
Phil, I'm going to let you kind of focus in on the last game we wanted to focus on, Washington and Dallas. What were your summary and thoughts about the Washington and Dallas matchup?
I'll keep it real succinct, man. RG3 is the truth. 20 of 28, 300 yards, 4 touches and a pick. He's the truth. Dallas. Before I even start on Dallas, the return of Pierre Garçon makes this offense even more dangerous. And I think we saw that. Garçon only had a couple of catches, but two of those catches were big plays, including one long touchdown. So just watch out, man. He's got a receiver that can take the top off the defense now. But Dallas, come on. 62 passes.
They are who we thought they were.
8 rushes. 62 passes and 8 rushes. Mm. That's all I got to say, man. That's it.
And we're going to do a segment on just Dallas sometime. Just to, you know, they got the fan sending petitions to the president, to the White House, to remove Jerry Jones. I mean, there's a straight mutiny going on down there with the fans in Dallas. You know, I think I'd love to do a segment on people who are running these organizations. You know, our great owner in Washington, I think, went to the rehabilitation program and is paying off. So some of these other folks need to follow suit. Quickly, Eric, as our guest, give me a couple of just top performers that you were looking at that you saw this week that were great in terms of their performance in Week 12.
Yeah, I'll be quick. Andre Johnson, the guy had 9 receptions, 188 yards. The week before, he had 14 receptions, 273. This guy is an absolute monster, and I think everybody underestimated him in that injury, that nagging hamstring from last year. But the guy is healthy. He's an absolute beast right now. He's performing at an unreal level. And then on the defensive side, on the same team, J.J. Watt. J.J. Yeah. Watt had 5 solo tackles, 3 sacks, and 2 defended passes. The guy is, I don't even know what you want to call the guy. When I watch him play, he's so big. He's just a big, strong, physical guy. I mean, he's got all these braces on. He looks like a, you know, like a transformer. I mean, this guy is humongous. So those are my 2 impressive performers, Andre Johnson and J.J. Watt.
See, this is the kind of analysis you get
when you
bring the guru on.
Yes.
The reason why I had him do that, I hope y'all all got your paper, pencils, computers, your iPhone, your iPad, your laptop, ready to make some moves. Because that's why I ended it with him, because, hey.
Get your game tight, player.
Fantasy football, life. Eric Hamilton, R.E., fantasy football expert.
He's got a very unique style, almost European.
The K-Zoo Guru.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable, and I'm just ferocious.
Football Sensei, Eric Hamilton. Anytime he comes on, he kills it. With this information right here, man, you're going to be able to go over and rush your lead, man. Get in the cypher.
Welcome to Week 13 of the Fantasy Football Cypher. Shout out to the Game Changer. Shout out to the Game Changer for his intro for the Fantasy Cypher. Eric, we're bringing you back in. Before we bring you in, I just need to set the table. On the last Fantasy Football Cypher back in Week 9, Eric highlighted some guys that he just could not work with. And one of them was Calvin Johnson. And I just want to thank you for dogging Megatron, because Megatron has been a beast since you dogged him.
Yeah.
So, and as a result, my fantasy team is thriving. How you doing this week, Eric?
I am fantastic, and Calvin Johnson is thriving. I think he was listening, to be honest with you. I think he was listening.
Okay. All right. We'll ride with that. So, we're going to have a little bit of fun this week. We're doing a fantasy football cypher with Eric Hamilton, the fantasy football guru from KZoo. We are going to touch on some waiver wire pickups. We're going to talk about some individual defensive players. And then Eric's got a special segment here of playoff fantasy football. So, Eric, let's start off with the waiver wire pickup of the week. Who do you have out there for our listeners?
I've got 2. But my number 1 waiver wire pickup for the offense is Bryce Brown. Philadelphia Eagles. You've seen it Monday night. I've seen it. Everyone's seen it. 178 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 4 receptions. Never mind a couple of fumbles that come along with the territory. Let's get into a little bit of analysis on why this guy is gonna produce. And again, we're talking about this guy is going to make an impact for another few weeks. LeSean McCoy, who is obviously a top 3-4 back drafted this year, phenomenal running back. Right now he's stuck in phase 1 of his concussion, okay? So he hasn't passed any baseline tests. He's experienced symptoms and headaches and such like that. So he's not going to play Week 13. He may not play Week 14. So realistically, with this kind of concussion, with him being out like this, similar to Michael Vick, as you see, he might be out for the rest of the year, because why rush him back? You don't have playoff implications. So the guy could be out for quite a few weeks. So again, you know, Bryce Brown, he's got a unique size and speed package. I mean, the guy is fast. I mean, he's kind of shifty. Again, by halftime, just halftime of the game, he had more fantasy points than McCoy had in any game this season. I'm going to say that again. Maybe the cast didn't hear me. By halftime of this game, this Monday night game, he had more points than McCoy did in any single game.
Okay, I got it that time. Yeah.
So, again, when I say that this guy is going to be a problem for the next few weeks, this is a guy that if he is available, and he's a hot commodity right now because he played on Monday night, everybody's watching. But, I mean, this guy is going to be the starting running back for Philadelphia for at least 2 to 3 weeks. Get him if you can, especially if you need some help at the running back. My second waiver wire pick is Detroit's finest, Ryan Broles. Again, Titus Young, who I was high on early in the season, I don't know what this guy has done wrong, but he's done something wrong to the coaching staff, and he's been sat down. So, I mean, yeah, he's in a doghouse. I don't know what this guy's going on. But since Broles stepped in on Thanksgiving, he played 81 of the 91 snaps versus the Houston Texans. He caught 6 passes for 126 yards on 12 targets. Now, Detroit Lions throw the ball a ton, probably lead the league, or they're in the top 3 or 4 as far as passes being thrown. So, again, he had 12 targets. That's right behind Calvin Johnson. So, again, it's been reported that the knucklehead Titus Young is not going to be able to play this week again. So, again, this guy is, I think he's going to be maybe a wide receiver 3, but, you know, he's playing Indianapolis this week. He's got a pretty good schedule, but nevertheless, whoever he's playing, he's the number 2 receiver playing outside of Calvin Johnson, and that's where the coverage is going to be, and they throw the ball a ton. So if you can get this guy, I would definitely grab him. But my number 1 overall pick, Bryce Brown.
So you're listening to the Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. You're listening to Week 13 of the Fantasy Football Cipher with Eric Hamilton. And just a refresh, it's you're headed into Week 13 of the Fantasy Football season. A lot of leagues, this is the last week. For others, it's typically Week 14. And so Eric has gotten you through the season. Okay, as Eric has said in the past, don't get cute. Continue to listen to the guru. He has gotten you this far. Okay, and one of the things that our Fantasy Cipher has done is really focus on individual defensive players in the IDP formats. Now, Eric is going to talk about defensive linemen, linebackers, as well as some defenses that really have him excited for this Week 13. Eric, why don't you talk about your defensive linemen first?
Yeah, absolutely. A high pickup early in the year, Mario Williams. Most folks were high on Mario Williams. He was a flat-out disappointment, just a disappointment. Didn't do anything. You might as well say he didn't even play. Over the last few weeks, last 4 weeks, I like to look at things in quarters. He's had 17 tackles, 5 sacks, and a pass deflection. For a lineman, that is good ball. He's playing good ball. He's not playing J.J. Watt ball, but at this point, you can't find a J.J. Watt. So Mario Williams is the best thing that's out there. So if your defensive lineman is struggling, not producing, take a look at the last couple of weeks for Mario Williams because this guy's been putting up numbers. His next couple of games, Jacksonville and St. Louis Rams. Again, Mario Williams is somebody is if you need help at the defensive line position, if you don't got JPP, if you don't got J.J. Watt, or Jared Allen. I mean, this is somebody that you want to take a look at.
Eric, let's move on to linebackers. Who are some linebackers that have you excited for Week 13?
Jared Mayo leads the league in tackles. When you look at the New England defense, who has been playing very well this year, most people think about Jared Mayo. Well, let me tell you this. Over the last 4 weeks, again, we look at quarters. Jared Mayo has 40 tackles, which is about 10 per game, which is freaking good. He's got 1 sack. He's got a fumble force, a forced fumble. But his compadre on the other side of him, Brandon Spikes, he's got 39 tackles in the same time frame, 2 fumbles forced over the last 4 games. So, again, Brandon Spikes is somebody that has been flying underneath the radar. But this guy flat-out balls. He get to the ball. So the thing about it is this. Brandon Spikes, he gets a lot of assisted tackles. So, again, with you know, the difference between a solo and assist is, you know, somebody run over there and you kind of hold the guy until your compadres come. He's good at that. And so if you play in a league where you get points for assisted tackles, this guy produces. So Brandon Spikes is one guy to keep an eye on. My second candidate to keep an eye on for the linebacker is EJ or Aaron Henderson, excuse me, Henderson, out of Minnesota. So Henderson, he produced very well last year. This year he started out hot. He had 12 tackles in the first game. I mean, the guy was on fire. He had a concussion, missed a couple of games, and he was just not getting back in the rotation. Jasper Brinkley was the starting linebacker along with Chad Greenway, so he just wasn't getting the snaps. But last week, he finally got his snaps. He finally was able to get in the game and stay on the field on third downs. Again, we can break out the third down segment on a different occasion, but it's important that you have a linebacker that does not rotate on passing downs. So he finally was able to do that. And when he did that for the first time in about six games, he got that spot back, nine tackles, and one pass deflected. So, again, this is somebody, he is a producer. A lot of guys are going to run on Minnesota, and Chad Greenway does this thing. EJ Henderson, if he's available, you want to look out for this guy because he's a tackling machine. Go back to last year. Go back to earlier this year. His stats prove it. Whenever he was healthy, the guy is a madman. So keep your eye on E.J. Henderson, also Brandon Spikes.
So a recap, Eric has suggested defensive lineman. He likes Mario Williams for the Buffalo Bills. Linebackers, he's excited about Aaron Henderson as well as Brandon Spikes. And I'll throw in a defensive back, Tyvon Branch. This is a guy that has always been a top five safety defensive back in IDP formats, but he got a stinger and concussion symptoms a couple of weeks ago, and it was unknown if he was going to come back. And so right now in Yahoo leagues, he's available in about 90% of those because a lot of people dropped him and forgot about him, as well as in ESPN leagues, he's available in about 82%, wherein 5 weeks ago when he wasn't injured, it was about 20%. Of IDP leagues he was available in. So you might be able to snatch a really good defensive back who's going to give you some top five numbers. So that's our IDP wrap-up on week 13 of the Fantasy Football Cypher. Now, Eric, you have a defense that I hope you have some really, really, really good support for this team, because when I saw that you wanted to talk about this team, I said to myself, how many of our listeners are going to trust you considering all the drama that has been going on with this franchise? So I have set the table for you, man. Talk about this defense and why you think they're one to trust during your playoff run.
So this is the thing with defenses. If you have a stud defense like Phil does, Chicago Bears, don't worry about that. Yeah, just roll with your defense. Don't get cute. But
right.
If you got a bad defense, somebody giving you 3 points here and there, maybe 10 one week and two the next week or a minus, listen, it's time to play the matchups. If you play the matchups, you can get by because, again, it's kind of like playing poker. You're just playing the percentages. So anybody that's playing Arizona Cardinals, start them. Anybody that's playing Kansas City Chiefs, start them. I don't care who it is. So, in this particular week, we have the New York Jets.
Say it one more time.
They've been clowned. The New York football Jets, as Boomer would say. And, again, Fireman Ed, I believe he's bailing on the Jets. I mean, he doesn't want to be associated with them. But the Jets are playing the Arizona Cardinals this week. So, just think about this. The Rams D, they gave up 18 points, but they got a pair of pick sixes last week on the rookie quarterback. Arizona, they had the fourth most turnovers on the season. They allowed more fantasy points to defenses than any other team. Not even the Jets would screw this up. Even if you go back and look at the Jets and how they've played, they beat the teams they're supposed to beat. It's the other teams, the above 500 teams that they struggle with. That's when the defense doesn't show up. They should put up good numbers for you, the Jets. And a desperate play is the Carolina Panthers. They're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, just looking at the percentages. The odds that they're going to put up more than 13 points, very slim. They're going to turn the ball over. You know, again, if you're at this point, you don't have a good defense, go ahead and play the percentages. Anybody playing Arizona, anybody that's playing Kansas City. And this week is the Jets and the Panthers.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys at RealSportsGuys.com. We're hanging out with Eric Hamilton for Week 13 of the Fantasy Football Cypher. Eric has already went through his waiver wire pickups. He just spent a few minutes on his IDP pickups. He suggested that you want to go with the New York Jets, and he gave his reasons. And, you know, I got to say, you won me over. You won me over. I just picked him up from one of my leagues. So now we're going to ride into
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
So, Eric goes in deep. Okay, in week 7 of the Fantasy Football Cypher, Eric went in deep to talk about for IDP formats, you need to look at how scorekeepers, how liberal they are with the assisted tackles. Okay, I mean, this is the level of analysis. D. Wills kind of gotten this a few minutes ago with Eric. This is the level of analysis you come to expect from the guru. Okay, Eric, playoffs, how to play defense. Take it over.
So this is the thing. At this point of the season, you're in one of three positions. Either you're one, you're in the playoffs, you're just kind of looking around to see if you can solidify your team. Okay, you're already in. Number two, you're right on that fence. You're one win away. You're almost there, almost in the playoffs, and you are looking to fight tooth and nails to get in. Or you're number three, you're out, you're coasting, you're just ready for next year. You're just chalking up. You stop playing fantasy football, you're just watching the games at this point. So, primarily for the ones that are in Category 2, you are clawing and scratching to get in the playoffs. All you want to do is get a shot to get in, and you believe in your head that your team will pull some miraculous stuff if you get in. So, at this point, again, you're at the desperation phase. So you want to do what it takes to get in the playoffs. And sometimes you got to go to the underground side of fantasy football, the underworld, the dark side. Now, what do I mean by this? So what you want to do is you want to look at your opponent's team. Look at what his needs are. Look at where he's weak. And what do? You scoop up that position off the waiver wire. Prime example, over the last couple of weeks, I had an opponent or two that needed a certain position. They were weak in a certain position. So what did I do? I would go into the waiver wire, I pick them up, and I drop them a couple of minutes after
you
picking up.
You play a hate, guru. You play a hate. What's up with that?
What the common piece is now that they can't take advantage of that particular player because of the waiver time. It's going to take 2 days for him to be available, et cetera. Again, I know it's dirty. It's the underside. It's the underboss side. And not everybody wants to get grimy like that. But to be smart, to be a true GM, your ultimate goal, what did Herm say you want to do? You play to win the game.
That's right. Sometimes
you have to do some things that you know, you just may have to do some things. The guy in another league that I'm in, he picked up 3 or 4 tight ends and dropped them really quick because he had additional moves and the guy needed a tight end. You know, so sometimes, especially if you're at this point at number 2, which is I'm on the verge of making the playoffs, come on to the dark side, underworld. Do what it takes to get into the playoffs. Be smart. Be a good GM. Make it happen. Eddie DeBartolo style.
All right, so we got a bonus question for Eric. We've been getting some emails and some stuff on Facebook about the Denver Bronco running back situation, and you're going to see if Eric can make some sense of this. All week, heading into week 12, there was talk about Hillman and Ball would be splitting carries. And, you know, I thought Shanahan was still in Denver, man. John Fox just straight ran the okey-doke. And he started your favorite player, Eric, Knowshon Moreno. Okay? And he got all the carries. Eric, can you quickly make some sense of the Denver Broncos situation, running back situation?
You know, he did. He pulled some Shanahan, some Shanahanigans is what some folks call it. But the thing about it is this. Moreno, as much as I dislike him, for previous years that he didn't perform to the level he should. He's fresh. He's fresh, and they were kind of, you know, they were kind of saving the guy. I mean, Hillman, for whatever reason, they didn't think that he could carry the ship. They didn't think he can hold the flag. He couldn't get it done. Ball is a nice changeup guy. But Marino has that experience, and no one else really has that experience of carrying the ball and touting that ball. Again, you're looking at a team that is not like Philadelphia where they're just trying to try anything just to stay afloat. You've got a bona fide playoff team here, a championship caliber team. So, I mean, they'll continue to try to work Hillman in and get a little bit of ball, but Marino's going to be that guy. And I personally dislike the guy, but, you know, he's fresh. I mean, he looked good. He was cutting well. He can catch pretty good up in the backfield. Marino's that guy. I don't know why they saved him this long, but ride the wave while you can because the guy's injury prone.
So you've been listening to RealSportsGuys.com, and we're wrapping up week 13 of the Fantasy Football Cypher. Eric will be back with us for week 15, right in the midst of the Fantasy Football playoffs. For those who are just downloading the Cypher, feel free to go back one back in iTunes and listen to our full two-hour show. So let's move on with our show, and we will kick it over to D Wills for five on the black hand side.
Five on the black hand side.
Yes, yes, yes. So we're here with five on the black hand side. It's NBA style. We're going to look at players who are arrows are either up or they're going down. We got some players that you know, some of your favorites, and so we'll go around the horn on that to really get in and dig deep with it because, you know, the association is up and full and running. There's a lot of storylines, and we're excited. So the first player we're going to look at in terms of whether his arrow is up or down, and we'll kind of go around the panel and get their perspective, is Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo has been starting on fire, but the Knicks are coming back. But, you know, is this early success really an indication that his era was up, or will it die out and will we see the same old Melo? Will it result in some into a positive outcome for the Knicks? We don't know. But all of my guys who are here have been looking at it. And so, Phil, I'll go to you and get a sense of, is Carmelo's era going up or is it going down?
Well, I think it's going up. I think it's up. Primarily because of the success that his team is having. I said this a couple of years ago when Amari first got in New York and they had Raymond Felton, they had Gallinari, and they jumped out to a really good start and they were playing great basketball, you know, before they made that big trade to get Billups and some other guys. I think that the Knicks offense it has room for one ball stopper. So I'm really concerned about what happens when Amari comes back. So right now, Carmelo's playing good ball. He's putting in 26. He's scoring. You know, he's shooting the ball well from the field. You know, 47% clip, and he's getting 7 boards. And they're playing him at the 4 position. When you bring Amari back, you're gonna have to move Carmelo to the 3, or you just got to go small without Chandler. You don't want to do that because he's the anchor for the defense. So, you know, I think the coach is going to have a lot of different things that he's going to need to do to kind of stabilize the situation. But right now, I say arrow up for Carmelo.
Okay. Eric, what's your thought on Carmelo?
You know, I'm a simple guy. I'm a simple numbers guy. So for me, with Carmelo being the number 2 scorer in the league, okay, his points are up, check. His field goal percentage is up from last year, check. His three-point percentage is up 10% from last year, check. His rebounds are up, check. So to simply answer your question, yes, his aerial is trending up. But I've never questioned his ability to score. That's not what I have a question with Carmelo on. What I question with Carmelo is, when it comes time to the playoffs, can you lead your team? And so, you know, really his arrow is always trending up. I mean, the guy can play ball. No one questions, can the guy score? So, yeah, his team is doing well. And like Phil mentioned, you know, when Stoudemire comes back, that'll be a a totally different offense, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But, again, it's kind of like show me – it's kind of like your Dirty Birds, the Atlanta Falcons. You got to show me what you're going to do in the playoffs, Carmelo. I know you can score. I just need you to see – I need to see you lead your team somewhere.
And, you know, one of the things that – and I think y'all said all that – you know, I felt like his arrow was up, and y'all talked about his percentages and things like that. And one of the things I saw is his energy on the defensive end and his commitment seemed to be up in these early games. He seemed to put a little greater emphasis on playing, being starting from the defensive end. We all know he can score. It seemed like, you know, some games where you saw him rotating over, blocking shots, taking pride on that end. And my question is, you know, can he sustain that over a season? You know, what I've said about Carmelo this year, I've been joking with some people that, you know, Lala said something to him. He playing like Lala said something to him. You know, that, you know, she was tired of going to these summer parties, LeBron's house, and you know, all these folks, you know, now seeing, you know, their trophy. And,
yeah.
you know, not only seeing the wedding ring, but seeing the championship ring. And, you know, that means something. So, you know, he playing with a little extra motivation. But I also think, and I'd be interested to get y'all sense in terms of the Woodson factor. For some reason, Woodson is different than his last two coaches, in my sense. And what do y'all think the coach has played in terms of how he's approached this season?
Well, I think
maybe
Woodson,
I'll go with you there. Yeah.
Woodson's always been a player's coach, man. When you look at what he did down in Atlanta, he had a way to kind of get guys to play for him hard. The question in Atlanta, as Marcus always says, it was like an AAU team. Cats were always playing hard, but they weren't always playing on one accord. And that's the challenge that he has for the Knicks. I think the real, real, real work in Woodson's job is going to come when Amare's back. When Amare's back, now you've got something. I mean, it just makes his work twice as tough. Because Amare is such a talent. You don't want to see a talent like that go to waste on your bench. You don't want to make him unhappy. You have to find a way to make these two guys coexist with Chandler. So that's the challenge. The jury's still out for me on Woodson. We've seen this show before. We've seen Carmelo do really well on a team early in the season. I mean, fast forward to Denver. You know, fast forward to back when Amare was hurt last year. It's no problem getting Anthony to play well when he doesn't have a guy that he has to defer to.
But my question, I guess my question with that is, and I kind of was a little tongue-in-cheek about it, but, you know, LeBron winning the championship, you know, they're talking about Carmelo going and working extra hard. I mean, at first, you know, he and LeBron had always been tied at the hip, but LeBron is separated, right? He's separated. It's a big separation right now because of the fact he got his first ring. He's in a different group of conversation, and I think for the first time in Carmelo's career, you know, if the separation is almost with a fence in the middle of it, right? You know, you just have moved into another neighborhood, right? You know, before y'all was both living in the same neighborhood, it was nice, but now he in the neighborhood with they got like the security at the gate. And he's at the gate like, and LeBron not really answering the phone. Or
what was that noise again? Can you go with that beep again? What was that, Devon?
You know, kind of like it's a buzz, it's an annoying buzz that they always have at these very palatial kind of, you know, where you just kind of buzz in. The hardest thing is they talk about Justin Bieber being stuck like this, where you at the gate buzzing and nobody letting you in. You know, the cars are passing like, what is this fool doing? That's Carmelo right now. He can't get into that neighborhood because he don't have the pass. Eric, what role do you think you know, the kind of LeBron piece plays in this motivation? Do you think there's any push with that? Is that sustainable based on what Phil just said?
Oh, man, that's drive. That's motivation. You know, with LeBron and D-Wade coming in at the same class as him, they yeah. both have rings. He doesn't. I'm sure he considers himself an elite player. I guarantee in his mind, he's a top 1-2 player. And so when you see that you are for the first time not even mentioned in the conversation with LeBron, now you're being mentioned in the conversation with, you know, Joe Johnson and them cats. Again, I think that he sees that, you know, he's got to step this up because, again, nobody questions his talent. And you know, no disrespect to Joe Johnson, you know, that's my guy. But, you know, no one's questioned his talent. His talent has never been questioned. You will never hear nobody say this cat can't score the rock. Because in an all-star game or in the Olympics, you see what he does. You know how he get down. The guy can score. But the thing is, it takes more than that. It takes more than just you scoring. Kobe had to figure that out. Jordan had to figure it out. Is you can't do it alone. You got to make your team better. And Carmelo hasn't really gotten to that point yet. Or if he has, it hasn't shown on the court or on the stats yet. So, yes, it's motivation. Seeing his boys that he came in with not only join teams, but they got championship, and he know they're going to be a problem for years to come. It's not like they're a one-hit wonder. He's got to look at these dudes every single year. You got to be able to get by these same two cats that came in with you. Oh, and Bosh. And, you know, I mean, you like, come on, man. You know, you like,
Bosh,
I can't even
one.
Get in. Yeah, even Bosh got one, too. So, you know, I think it's definitely motivation for him. I mean, the joke about what Lala said was funny, man. But realistically, man, you want to be in that conversation. And when you reach the point where you start to actually see, man, I'm really not in that conversation. You know, it's a reality check. So,
I tell you what, I do like what New York has done, bringing in Jason Kidd and Rasheed Wallace has made a comeback to the NBA. I'll say
That's right.
Rasheed Wallace has made a comeback to the NBA. He actually looked pretty good in Detroit. He looked pretty good in Detroit last night. So, I like what they're doing in New York. Personally, I thought that the team was better with Felton before they made the move and, you know, to send him to the Nuggets a couple of years ago, and Felton is back. So I like what New York's doing, and I wouldn't be surprised if they can find a way, man, for Amare and Carmelo to coexist, man. They can make a formidable team.
And I think your point about Rasheed being there, I think, is going to be important because I think he's the kind of person, I always say in these locker rooms, you need a vet that everybody's going to listen to because he's been there. And Rasheed can play that role for this team and really address things with Amari and Carmelo that nobody else in the locker room can do. And he can do it in a way they're going to respect.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be an important piece because Mike can only do so much. You need people who can help police that locker room and keep guys all focused on what is going on. So I like the idea, you know, I think Rasheed could play an important role, you know, considering Rasheed's career with Texas and everything else, knowing that that's the role he's going to play in his locker room. And I think he's relishing it. You can tell he's having fun again. He's pepping his step and he's knocking down threes. I was watching on League Pass, like, this is it. But speaking of championships, our number two on Five on the Black Hand Side has won a couple rings, but yet has been under scrutiny, been picked, prodded. You know, some people could say he's one of the best big men in the league. Other folks say he's not living up to his potential. That's Pau Gasol. He's averaging 13.4 points this year, about 9 rebounds. Per game, he's about 3.4 assists. You know, he's shooting, close to 73% from the free throw line. You know, 33% from three-point range. Ain't take that many shots. About 43% in terms of field goal percentage. His numbers are obviously per game are down. You know, but is his arrow up? I'm going to let y'all talk a little bit because I got a different perspective on this one. But Phil, I'll let you go with this. Is Powell Darrell up or down?
Well, I think it's neutral. I think it's neutral because I think it's neutral because Powell is a guy that you can tell that he has thrived off structure. He thrived off the structure of the triangle. He thrived with what Mike Brown was doing with him last year. And now with all these different changes and not having Steve Nash there. Steve Nash, if he had been, you know, I mean, he's been injured the majority of the season, but he's a guy that can kind of hold everything together. He can be like that clothes basket type of cat. You know, I'm put everything in this clothes basket, then take it upstairs, take it downstairs. That is Nash. So I'm not highly concerned about his numbers. I think at some point, and, you know, I'll give Marcus the game changer credit for this. It's kind of growing on me that at some point, I think Gasol's going to get moved to another team this season, possibly. I don't think that's the best thing for the Lakers, but I think when you're looking at trying to figure out how does he and Dwight Howard fit, if you have Dwight Howard, do you need another seven-footer playing huge minutes? You probably don't. And so I think Gasol still has a couple of good years into him where he can play high-quality basketball, you know, being the top choice like he was in Memphis. I just don't think that there's enough balls to go around, basketballs to go around in L.A. right now. And when you got Kobe, you got D12, you got Nash, you got Ron, you know, I mean, you got a whole lot of guys holding on to the ball, and you got Gasol trying to find somebody to pass it to him. So that's why I say he's neutral. I think the talent is still there. In the current system, he certainly thumbs down. But I think he has potential, and he's enough of a strong piece where the Lakers can leverage him to kind of fill in other holes that they have.
All right. Eric.
Yeah, again, you know, I'm a simple numbers guy. The cat is averaging 18 points since being with the Lakers. Numbers down, points per game down to 13, check, so that's down. Field goal percentage is down to 43% from being around 50, check. His free throw percentage is down to 73 from 79, check. His rebounds are down from 10 to 11, down to 9, check. His arrow is pointing down. Now, when Nash comes back, I do think he's going to be one of the big beneficiaries to Nash's style. But to answer your question right now, his arrow is pointing down. He is still very talented. And I haven't heard your theory on moving Gasol because I am interested to hear that. Maybe I missed that show. But the Lakers proved that it's important to have those two seven-footers as they were able to get some championships out of the seven-footers. And I think that having a big team, like when they had Odom, Gasol, and Bynum together, they were some bad boys because size, nobody could do anything with them. And then, again, I think the Lakers have other holes that will be exploited. But, I mean, having the big guys always gave them one advantage, you know, the advantage of the size. And I think if you lose Gasol, you're going to lose a piece of that size because now Odom's gone. Now, you know, Gasol is gone. Meta world peace. Cats know how wishy-washy that cat is. You don't know which one you're going to get. And Steve Nash, I mean, you know, his back is bad. The cat, you know, he was on the sideline most of the year last year. Again, he posts great assist numbers, but, you know, trying to keep that team healthy. And Kobe only has another few years before he's going to be ready to hang it up. Dwight Howard's coming off that bad back. Now we got a brand new coaching style, which is going to be very high-flying, very impactful. But, again, is it going to lead to a championship? Is defense going to be the focus? You know, so, again, when it comes down to it, Gasol's arrow, in my opinion, is trending down. But the Lakers overall, I wasn't high on this whole thing anyway with the Nash and Dwight Howard. So I could be wrong at the end of the season. They are going to make the playoffs. They might get in as a, you know, 4, 5, 6, something like that. But they're not going to make the noise that is expected.
And for me, I was going to say, it's funny, I laughed, Phil, because you said neutral. I wasn't going to say neutral, but I said the segment is up or down. So if I got to pick a choice, I'm still thinking he's still trending up. And I think the impact of what he's doing right now is a function of the, is a result of the dysfunction of the organization. You know, if I were saying, if I said to people, you can get a 7-footer who's going to get you, close to a little over a block or two per game, somewhere around 10 or 11 rebounds per game, you know, could average anywhere between 18 and 23 per game, could shoot from the free throw line somewhere in the 80, high 70s, 80% per game, can shoot in the mid 50 field goal percentage per game. Most people are going to sign up for that.
Yeah.
You know, and part of what I think is happening to Saul, and I like what both of you said about the round structure and who he is that he is someone who understands the value of winning in a system, that most good teams have a system that works, and he's very cerebral. And I think that's something that works well for him, although I think he can play in a free-flowing game. And so I think that what we're seeing with him is really not about him. It's about the dysfunctional organization. You know, it's about, now that it's free-for-all, he's not going to get as many shots because it's free for everybody else to shoot. You know, and so there's no discipline in looking down and getting the ball to him, like there was demands, under Phil Jackson and even under Mike Brown somewhat more about making sure Paul was involved. So, I think that if they move him, the reason why they're going to move him is they think they need to build the bench. My biggest thing, and I've been on, hitting you guys on text and Twitter, is, utilizing some of that young talent, Darius Morris. I think, this is a guy who can play big, who can grow and defend. I think that's going to be an advantage to them. He could add some value. And if you're just talking about getting ready for the playoffs, Doc Rivers style, not worried about where you're going to be seated, you can allow for some of these young guys to develop. But he is the only asset they can move to if they want to build a bench and fill some holes. I think his arrow is trending up. The next person, this person is probably the most volatile, is Blake Griffin. Eric, I'll go to you a little bit for this. I'm going to say myself, I'm sitting the cut on this one because I definitely got opinion on Blake. Phil knows I got opinion on Blake. So, Eric, I'm going to go to you there, go back to Phil, and I'm going to finish off on this one.
Yeah. Again, guys, I'm a simple guy. His free throw percentage is down. His field goal percentage are down. His rebounds are down, and his points are down from last year. Guys, his arrow is trending down. Just saying as a guy, a baller, I mean, he can jump. He puts up, he can catch a ball out midair. But this guy's arrow is turning down.
Eric said there's no gray area here. So, yeah. Okay. Eric said, listen, fellas, I don't care how you ask it, I'm a numbers guy. Okay.
That's all I got on Blake, baby. This is zero to the down.
I'm going to shut it down. That's all you need to say. Phil, I don't know if you can top this one. I don't even know if we need to go any farther. I don't know if we even need to go any farther, but I... Eric has shut it down.
He did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all I'll say is down, trending down, pass. That's it. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, that's all I need to say. I highlighted it three areas. 16.8 down from even 22.5 in 2010-2011. He went from 12.1 rebounds in 2010 to 2011. Now he's down to 8.9, and then field goal percentage. And this is why Game Changer says a lot of things about staying ahead of the scouting report. He talked a lot about guys who really trying to work on their game. One of the things we talked a little bit about Kobe going in and early on and working on developing things even as a guard post game and doing things that you do because you want to be late. That's great. And, you know, this idea of LeBron even waiting this long in his career to work on some of those things. What disappointed me most about Blake is the fact that he is a post player, but he has not worked on developing his skills down in the post. And all this stuff is showing up right now. Yeah, he has some additional players on his squad, but I don't see he hasn't grown as a basketball player. I don't see any new pieces to his game other than what I saw last year. And that disturbs me because he seems like he's a smarter guy than that. You know, he can look around and see these are things I need to work on. It's as though he's just falling in love with the idea that he's this human highlight. So I got him trending down. D-Wade, I'm going to go over to Eric, man. D-Wade.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to you again, man. I'm going to go to the post. You're like Vinny right now. You're like old Vinny. I'm going to the post. I'm going right to you. We're going to set the screen and let you work it.
You know, Dwayne Wade is a phenomenal player. I want to start by saying that. He has been a warrior. The guy falls 8 times, get up 9 times. I mean, the guy is a flat-out warrior. However, if you look at his numbers, I'm a simple numbers guy, guys, unfortunately. His 18.1 is the lowest since his rookie year. His free throw percentage, 73%, is the lowest of his career. His arrow is trending down. The guy got to get healthy, and I think he's going to produce. But as of right now, his arrow's on the way down.
Phil.
Well, so I would say that his arrow is actually going up. You know what, I can't even make a strong argument. His arrow's down. I was gonna try to spin something, but I don't think y'all would have let it slide. So I'm just going.
So you just gonna leave that there?
Yeah, because the thing is, he's not getting to the line as much, man. And to me, you know, when you're not getting to the line much, you're shooting under 20% from three. I mean, this is a problem. When you change your game to be more of a jump shooter and you're not making your jump shots, that's problematic. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
And I'll just say with him, I think his arrow's going down, but I think where he's moving to, kind of like Kobe, is that where he's going to, you know, he's averaging 18. He's going to do more with his neck up than with his neck down like he used to. You know, he always has been a guy who can think the game, but he's at a point in his career where that's going to, because his body is so banged up, you know, he's playing much older than he really is because of the way he played the game. His arrow is down, but even with a down arrow, he's going to play like you will think his arrow is up, because at times where it needs to happen, he don't make plays because he can do it from the neck up. So that's what I'll say about him. Our last one is O.J. Mayo. I got him on my fantasy basketball team. I'll just say this. My belief, and I'll start out with this one, I see his arrow being up. And kind of like, you know, Eric is just by the numbers. You know, 21-5. You know, he is, you know, shooting 53% from three-point range. He's shooting, you know, 50% from, you know, just field goal percentage. He's doing everything. Team is playing better. He is, I think, found the right situation with Dallas. And, you know, I love it. And it seems like he's playing a more mature game. You know, even though he scored, he came out his rookie year and played really well in terms from a scoring standpoint. When you watch him play, it looks like he's playing a much more mature game. So I'll go over here to Eric and let you hit it.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. You know, you hit it right on the head. His numbers are up. Points per game is up 9 points from his previous year. Check. Field goal percentage is up. Check. Three-point percentage is up 20%. Check. His free throw percentage is up.
check, 10%, the guy's trending upward. He's found a great situation in Dallas, and he is providing a nice spark for those guys. And O.J. Mayo's always been a nice player, but he's in a good situation now where he fits in very well, and I think he's going to be a major asset for the Mavericks.
Okay. Phil T.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be a clean sweep. I mean, his minutes are up 20%, and everything else meaningful is up, including his free throw percentage. I like that he's shooting the three ball over 50%, and he's shooting six threes a game. So he's certainly getting it in. I just question, can he sustain this kind of performance? But he's a borderline all-star right now, and he certainly surprised me. I mean, this is the talent that we saw, that we expected from Mayo when he came out of USC a handful of years ago in 08. So he is certainly having a breakthrough year.
All right. Well, y'all know what time it is.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right. Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. We'll start with you, Phil T.
So I'm going to go on college basketball. Since the last time we've been on, the college basketball season has tipped off. And I'm going to pick out a kid from Michigan State University, Keith Appley. He's a point guard there at Michigan State. He's a junior. He actually dropped 50 points or thereabout against our high school, our alma mater, a couple of years ago in a state championship when he was playing for Detroit Persian. So this is a kid that we always knew could score. He's kind of been finding his own. Last year he had some struggles behind a three-point line. But right now he's averaging 17, 4, and 4. Michigan State's got a top 15 program. He's shooting about 50% from the field, but better yet, he's shooting about 45% from three. So this is a kid, I think when you think about Caden Lucas a couple of years ago, and he was a Big Ten Player of the Year, this is a kid that has as much, if not more, talent than Lucas. And I think that Appling has the ability to do this at the next level, too. University of Michigan, the Wolverines, are getting a lot of attention because of Hardaway, Rice, and also the kid Trey. Help me out, Devon. What's his name?
You hit me on it.
Trey Burke. I put you on the spot, and I was over talking to the coach on the sideline.
You get hit with the ball.
You was like your Steelers running back last year. You could hold on to the ball. Oh! Okay, so I think the Wolverines are getting a lot of attention, but I think at the end of the day it's going to be all about Sparty. So my dog of the week is Keith Appling.
We need more dogs.
All right. My dog of the week, and actually I got it too since you hit me with that one. The Michigan Wolverines won the NIT preseason. I'm going to give them a lot of love on that one. But my real dog of the week, because welcome back, Sparty, it's over. But my real dog of the week is Robert Guerrero and Andre Berto fight was shades of Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti. These cats basically fought 12 rounds in the phone booth, starting with Berto getting knocked down in the first couple rounds, getting shook around, eye closed. He came fighting back. It was a great fight in Ontario, California. If you have a chance to look at it, it's a candidate for fight of the year. So that's my dog of the week, along with the Michigan Wolverines.
We need more dogs.
And last but not least, we got the guru from KZU, Eric Hamilton. Man, it's been a pleasure to have you on, man. I never had so much fun. What's your dog of the week?
Man, I had a good time. My dog of the week, I'm going to stick with college, but I'm going to go to the football side on a topic that needs a little bit of attention. John Embry, the coach of the Colorado head football coach. And he was recently fired, and he brought up a topic. Again, before I even say this, okay, his record was 4 wins and 21 losses. Okay, I just want to throw that out there. But he brought up a topic that, you know, after an African-American coach is fired, they just don't get a second chance. And the numbers prove that to be true. Tyrone Willingham from Notre Dame was the only coach to get a second chance. So that is one out of 41 African-American head coaches since 1979 has been given a second opportunity in college football to coach. So as we see, that is an issue. That's a problem. And he brought that up, and that was a topic that that gathered some debate. And that kind of made me think a little bit, you know, the former president, Bill Clinton, he made a remark during the campaign for Barack, as he said that, you know, he said that they basically handed Barack a mess and they got upset because he wasn't able to fix it fast enough. So, I mean, if I'm looking for an opportunity to get into college football coaching, they're probably not going to take me and put me at a Michigan State, you know, an Ohio State, a Florida, you know, Alabama. They're not going to really put you at those spots. You may start at NIT or something like that. So you're taking a program and you have to build it from the ground up. So a lot of times the playing field isn't necessarily there because it's in disarray. So like, okay, let's give this guy a chance. And if they're not able to turn that around, they get the blunt of not getting the program turned around. But they also do not get the opportunity for a second chance. So I think you brought up something that was important, is the numbers are ridiculous. Again, you know, one out of 41 coaches since 1979 has gotten a second coaching gig after being fired or let go from the previous gig. So it's an issue in college sports. I mean, it's something that we definitely need to change. You know, somebody needs to just take a stand and do something. But it is an issue. So my dog of the week goes to John Embry.
I'm hitting you because when an African American can be John L. Smith, then we reach equality. That's the kind of quote. That's all I'm going to say. And like Chris Rock said, when you can be a mediocre coach and you get, when you can be North Turner,
yeah,
then we reach equality. So we're going to go, Phil T. You give us a couple of, I know we got some special things coming next week. Why don't you hit the people with that before we close on out?
Yeah, so we've got the Cotto fight coming up this coming weekend, and we've got a guy by the name of Teron Briggs who does some writing on boxing.com as well as for Fox. He's going to come on and help us break down the Cotto fight that's going on this coming weekend, so he'll be on next Tuesday. We also have a couple of guests coming up here in the next few weeks throughout the holiday season, including Patrick Hayes. We're still trying to figure out what day we're going to get him on, but he's a guy that writes for a really cool website. He's the editor there. It's called Ballin' Michigan. Ballin' Michigan, no G, ballinmichigan.com. And it's all about Michigan basketball, man. High school, small college, JUCO, Division 1, 2, 3. And I'm looking at an article right now where he's doing a 1999 remix of Mr. Basketball, which Jason Richardson won over Lavelle Blanchard. So
from
this is a really
school.
Cool site. That's right, Ann Arbor Pioneer. Goodness. Yeah, so that's what we got coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Well, we're hot here. You know, like I said, Phil T is like, if y'all know, I call him Dr. Dre. He always has it going on in the background. We're loving this. Thanks for being with us. Catch us on RealSportsGuys.com, Real Sports Guys Radio on Facebook, and at Real Sports Guys on Twitter. We love all y'all who support us. We look forward to engaging you again next week. Until then, with my man Eric Hamilton, the guru from KZoo. It's been a pleasure, baby. Listen to it. Get the download of that, all you fantasy folks. We're out.
Again, fellas, I'm a numbers guy.